Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21 to nothing in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Oscar show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. We're a big shakeup here in Los Angeles. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Joining us tonight for this hour, we have our friend A Couple Quickies, ready to break down the Oscar nominees and get a little feel, give you a little picture for what he's been seeing so far as we count down to Oscars 2017. I don't have a lot to say about the Oscars themselves, but it should be a fun time anyway. I couldn't imagine a better guest to break down the movies than our friend Quickies. So, we'll get him on in just a second here. Let me just quickly give you the news here in Los Angeles. Big news for the Lakers. The Lakers finally dismissed Jim Buss from his duties as vice president of basketball operations, and they also took down Mitch Kupchak in the process. But certainly that part did not grab the headline. The other half did, in which they elevated Magic Johnson to the president of basketball operations. Now that's crazy. To give you an idea of what the president of basketball operations is, this is the guy that oversees all basketball-related activities. He is not the end-all, be-all for decisions when it comes to an NBA team, but it's a very big job, and definitely he can have the final say in a lot of the on a lot of big decisions. And what's interesting is that, you know, that kind of job was held for years and years by Jerry West, another Laker icon. He was a terrific talent evaluator and continues to be, as he still works in a smaller capacity today in the NBA. But Magic, you know, over the years, you know, we would hear his comments about who he thinks would be great, who he thinks would be great players for the NBA, and the outcomes have been kind of disappointing. You're like, really, Magic? You want that guy? And then, so, and there's reason for worry for a lot of people, but I really don't think it's going to be quite that bad. I think it all depends on who he hires as the GM. He's already stated that it's going to take a couple years for the Lakers to get really good again. It's not going to happen overnight. And as a matter of fact, they made a trade the same day that he was hired as the president of basketball operations. They traded away Lou Williams, who was the Lakers' most productive bench player. But here's the important part. They traded him to the Rockets for Corey Brewer, who's nothing, but they traded for him and a first round pick, which is the big move, because if the Lakers don't have a pick, as if they lose their pick that they were slated to have because it wasn't a top three pick, meaning they were the third worst team / they got the pick in the lottery later on, then they get nothing. Well, this at least gives them something, and it's not going to be a great pick because the Rockets are in the playoff hunt. And they'll probably end up being low 20s. But it's better than nothing. It's a deep draft. It's a good time to do it. So the only thing about it is that... the one thing about it is that if they do finish with a top three pick and they get it in the lottery and they have a really bad record, and they're pretty close to that right now, they're the second worst team in the Western Conference, and that changes every day based on how the Phoenix Suns are playing, they would be below them in that conference. If they finish with a bottom three record and get that top three pick, then the Lakers have two picks, which is huge. I think that's huge. So, you know, Lou Williams was a great player for the year or so that he was with the Lakers, but clearly the Lakers are not going to get anywhere with him long term. So it was actually not that bad a move when he really stepped back and gave it a look. And so, you know, so far so good. The Lakers are also eyeballing Rob Pelinka, who is Kobe Bryant's agent, to be the successor at GM. So Magic is going to have a GM too. Like, it's not going to be just Magic calling all the basketball decisions, which I felt was going to happen anyway. But it does seem like, while it's bold, while it's you know, there are better player people to take as the president of basketball operations out there, much better. It's still not as bad as I think a lot of people are saying. Everybody on the Twitter was like, LOL Lakers yesterday. And I'm like, guys, you know, feel it out. Like, we don't even know what the extent of the operations are going to be for Magic. And I just wanted to be assured at least that he was going to hire a separate guy as a GM. And he did. And I'm sure that he's going to have a lot of pull when it comes to the decisions that are made by the Lakers. But if this trade yesterday... Well, and it's not a big trade. It's not really an earth-shattering trade. It's not DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, that's a big trade. But it's not a top 10 player moving across the country kind of trade. But this is still a good indicator because it's not a terrible decision. Like, this is a good Laker decision. This is a long-term move, and I think it's smart. I would rather he have been traded to a team that was in worse standing, but it kind of works both ways. Like, The team that's trading with the Lakers needs to get value in return, too. So if you really think about it, that's where the Houston Rockets are. They certainly could use another shooter. They're so good at shooting three-pointers. Having another guy that can do that, and Lou Williams has been tried and true, proven to shoot good three-pointers throughout the game. That's a good bench asset for them, for sure. So this is a trade that it could end up working for both sides, and a good start to Magic's front office career. It'll be interesting to see whether he becomes a complete joke or whether he's actually not that bad. We're going to find out. And look, I don't think anything he's actually said on Twitter has struck any confidence in me as an evaluator of talent. But the tandem of him in conjunction with Pelinka, assuming it's he who gets the GM position, could end up being decent. So I'm not ready to just... laugh, ha, Lakers, they suck. Look, they're an up franchise, yes. But this could turn around. I'm not ruling it out. So I think we just wait and see. So I'm not saying this is a great move. I'm not saying this is a disaster. We just don't know yet. We need time to figure that out. And I think there's potential this could end up being okay. So we'll see. All right, so let's switch gears now. We'll talk movies. And to do that accurately, I could only think of one guy to bring on the program with me, and he is a couple quickies. Welcome back to the program, sir. How's it going tonight?
Dave TV! What's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for jumping on the short notice. This is a fun idea, and I look forward to continuing this conversation with you. So,
Dave, I'm going to give you strike one. You missed a great segue. Magic Johnson, a major motion picture theater owner.
Oh, well, he was. Is he still? I wonder if he was.
Yeah, they're still Magic. They're probably the premier urban movie theater.
Yeah, I remember it well. I remember the first one that launched in Baldwin Hills. I remember that very well. I think they closed it, though. I mean, I do remember.
Well, we still have them around here, for whatever that's worth.
They do have. I mean, you're right, though. The brand is still around. That's true. I've seen a few of them in, as you mentioned, major urban centers.
It's that urban exit. And then they also have the Isaiah Thomas Theater in gay communities.
Oh, that's wild. And that's how we start
now, tonight. Babe, I've been working overtime for you, my man. I haven't felt as much pressure since I was in school.
Really?
Call you, asked me to be on the... Yes, absolutely. Because you said, would you do the podcast? Of course, I'm so honored. The premier podcast and all of podcasting. So I'm like, damn, I better get squared up on some movies. I just came from seeing La La Land tonight.
Oh.
I'm halfway through Hacksaw Ridge. Mm-hmm. So I basically can give you about, 40% of an Oscar preview here.
That's not bad. That's you know, and I think that's more than some of the experts would watch, too, in some cases.
There's too many movies. Nine movies get lost.
I can't believe they have it that high now. I mean, it seemed absurd when they announced that they were going to do that. I mean, it used to be, what, four or five, and now it's like nine. Like, there are not nine good movies a year of that caliber that could be nominated for Best Picture, but they get by somehow. They really have to really stretch. It's like expansion of anything, like expansion of sports. It's like, you know, that 29th team, like, no one's really paying attention to the Rays, you know, most of the time. And so it's kind of the same thing with these movies. It's like, you know, is everybody in on that ninth movie? And I'll show you what it is in a moment. I got the odds. You know, you were really you had done us a solid last year during the Mania podcast when you had the odds of all the matches. That was big time. And
No, that's a lot of fun. It's, you know, I mean, God help any fool that bets on wrestling. But,
I know exactly. That's sort of what we were saying last year too. Real, you lose your house over that would be just crazy.
Some WWE writers got their beach house paid for betting on their own crap. But,
oh man!
But yeah, with the Oscars, man, I gotta say, having seen it. Having somewhat of a feel, you know, I can't see La La doing anything but sweeping. La La Land is probably it, and, you know, I got to say, it's very deserving. I heard a lot of down things on it, but I love the crap out of that movie. You know, it's a musical, it's bittersweet, it's everything life is about, you know, heartbreak, heartache, heart rising, you know, it was really a terrific movie. Have you had a chance to see it yet yourself?
No, I'm so bad with movies. I haven't seen any of them. To be honest,
that's what I'm going to really urge you to get out and get to, because it is like L.A. Corn. It is every major landmark of Los Angeles, the planetarium, and some weird Christmas tree looking thing. I don't know, but I'm sure you were looking at it. Oh my God, there it is, the Christmas tree. So you should really just check it out.
I'm positive I'll recognize it once I see it, yeah. That's true. I think that's one of the reasons why it's going to be such a big deal at the Oscars, and it's been said repeatedly by many people that, you know, the Academy loves anything that references itself, meaning anything that's about the movie industry, about Hollywood. I mean, they just eat it up, and they're going to do it again. But yeah, I mean, everybody's seeing this film, which is a good thing. It's obviously caught some steam, and it does seem like an interesting premise anyway. I kind of was like, you know, it's kind of a fluffy movie for my vibe.
Well,
but
I was a little myself, you know, and I frankly, I can get into a musical. It's not a hardcore musical. It's
right.
Kind of a soft musical, shall we say. It's, you know, a musical to me is a song number, maybe a couple minutes of dialogue back into a song number. Like, this one definitely has lulls and stretches. Kind of a lot of music. But the music that's in it is quality, and it's, you know, if I could put on my my artiste hat, I mean, just the color palettes and the composition of you know, primary colors, vibrant colors, kind of colliding, and, you know, how they kind of ebb and flow in the movie and kind of, you know, tie in emotionally throughout. It's really, it was awesome. I mean, you know, just if you have a little bit of a design eye towards movies, which I'm kind of forced to. And I'm glad I do. I'm glad I was kind of immersed in that. And it's all the kind of stuff that even if it's not something that's totally your cup of tea, I think it functions on a level you're like, I don't know what I like about this movie, but I sure as shit like watching it. And I think just the colors alone in this, and, you know, it was funny looking at Emma Stone. I'm content. Do you remember the Ultimate Warrior was alleged to have died in wrestling, and they put in a fake Ultimate Warrior?
Ooh.
I feel like they put in a fake Emma Stone. It looks remarkably like Emma Stone, but for some reason it doesn't quite look like her. Like some kind of half-melted wax figure of Emma Stone. But regardless, real Emma Stone, fake Emma Stone, fantastic Emma Stone.
That's kind of funny. She had the two-face effect going, like the Seinfeld. Like, she looks good in one scene, and in another one, she looks kind of off.
Yeah, you know. It's like, well, I assume it's the same Emma Stone, because if you were going to get a new Emma Stone, you would probably get implants. But, you know, she's definitely quality. I don't know if she should win Best Actress. There's supposedly another great Best Actress role out there for a movie called Elle, but we can get into that later. Another one I haven't seen, but, you know, just heard great things about. But you know, as you said, definitely calling card to not even the business. I mean, I'd really would like to get your perspective down the road if you want to revisit on the podcast or whatever. Just it's such a nod to life in L.A. and, you know, living a creative life. Kind of, you know, the turbulence up and down of that. And, you
right.
know, maybe a little of the transience of living in Los Angeles or kind of any major city where people kind of come in seeking their fame and fortune, and sometimes the fortune is a little slow to come. So,
but a great flick. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, you know, that's it just gives me an idea for the weekend. Like, I could really just go all out and just watch as many of these as I can. I had the idea to, I know everyone's making fun of it today on the board, but I will watch Hidden Figures at some point just to see what it's all about. I also did want to watch The Founder. That was a good one, because I guess it's just because I like McDonald's.
I'm dying to see that. It's funny how these movies kind of fall between the cracks. Without going too far behind the curtain, there's definitely kind of a political positioning to it, and a lot of this is just the actors, how they represent it, kind of luncheons to say, hey, nominate The Founder. I believe The Founder was kind of eligible this year. But that movie really caught my eye, and it, for whatever reason, hasn't kind of caught the traction. But I would definitely like to see that, but not really being nominated for anything.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I thought it'd be on this list, too, and I don't see it. I see these other movies, and I'm just not familiar with them. There are a couple that I will comment on in a moment.
Sure, it would have gotten something. It's really, I don't know, maybe it's eligible for next year.
Maybe. It was close, right? Like, it's usually, when you release it about, when was it released? Like December or something?
Sorry, especially in depth, it's kind of, the weather is weird. Studios usually do a dump in January and August of kind of products and films they don't quite believe in. So.
Right. That's wild. Definitely, I'll share my thoughts on that, too. So that's, like, part of the plan. Like, I'm going to go... Maybe see that. I'm going to go see the Lego Batman movie because I've been dying to see that too. And then go check out... I guess that'll probably be it for me. Although everyone's been talking up Arrival. Did you see that one? That's the science fiction movie.
Oh, that's probably the next thing that I'm probably going to go out and see. A lot of the stuff is on demand and I have some friends with screeners, but I'd like to see the Arrival on a big screen. Would like to check it out. It's encouraging to see a movie like that can get nominated. That's what I do miss with that old cliche of it's an honor to be nominated. I think you lose a little of that when you nominate 9 pictures, for Best Picture, as opposed to just saying 5. And, I wonder if that movie would have kind of gotten that recognition in a different, environment. But, I heard good things about it. I heard it's a great, with lightning fast first 40 minutes, and then it kind of runs out of steam. But, I'd like to see it for myself. Nice to see sci-fi kind of get a little pop.
Oh, yeah. I remember, let's see, I don't know about the absolute last one. I remember having a run in the Oscars, but I do remember when Avatar came out, it had a little bit of play. It was wasn't it nominated for Best Picture, too? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that was probably, you could argue, was almost the last upset. I forget which one year, but mm-hmm. You'd kind of have to go into the Wayback Machine to see. But I remember that was really, the odds are favorite. Odds on favorite. Sorry, I'm trying to do my dub speak.
Odds on favorite.
But now I'm kind of intrigued to look that up. But yeah, no, I heard that had all the momentum. And that, I think that almost reached the point of kind of, some critical mass backlash, enough about the Avatar.
And I think maybe there was some resentment from the highfalutin types, too.
I believe they're shooting right now either 3, 4, or 5 new Avatars.
Really?
Yes, kind of simultaneously. That's putting a lot of faith in a dopey movie about a bunch of blue assholes. I was quite sick of that movie by the end of it. I thought, oh my.
Yeah.
I saw that. That was one of the first big 3D movies. That was the 3D revolution. Now, TV is dead. And, we haven't even gotten the second Avatar out of it, They're just shooting them all constantly and concurrently until the end of time.
That is what. It's kind of weird because, like you said, like there hasn't been a sequel yet, as far as I know. So they're going to just throw them all at us at the same time. Wow.
Well, there's so much to having, my God. I just think these sequels can just sit on a shelf forever and be evergreen. Go talk to the people that made the new Dumb and Dumber movie the new Independence Day. I was watching Independence Day not long ago. That mm-hmm. is such a good movie, the first Independence Day. And it's how do you wait 20 years to whip out a sequel?
It seemed like by then it was too late.
Yeah, that whole audience you grew up on it is has kids. Who the hell's going back to the theater to see that nonsense? You don't have Will Smith. Would you get lost with these dopey aliens?
Yeah, that's not gonna. It's just not gonna be as good without Will Smith. That's just the bottom line.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's the anchor of your movie. I mean, whatever it takes, you got to write the check to him. Now, whatever, you know, get his dopey ass in the movie.
Yep.
Make it free Independence Day. Have his idiot kid in him. That Jalen Rose or Jaden Smith, whatever the hell his name is. You know, stick him in the movie. I'm actually trying to do a little Avatar research now to see what the hell beat that out.
But, wild and crazy. What'd you find?
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was wondering
I'm trying to find it right now. IMDb has redone their whole site. I can't find any freaking
all right.
Awards. I'll track it out.
I'll rely on an old favorite, Wikipedia.
That's a great call.
I know. Well, hopefully this is accurate enough. We'll see what we ended up. Oh boy, you know, do you remember this? The host of the 2009 Oscars was Hugh Jackman.
Well, he is Mr. Oscar, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, any gay guy, you know, he's like a gay guy in a closet with a screen door. Like, you can basically see right through that closet. You know, there he is, and he's a fantastic song and dance man. He was a great host, actually. What do we got hosting this year, Dave?
This year it's Jimmy Kimmel. Big fan, so...
God.
Oh, you're not a fan?
You're
not a fan?
Well, I don't know. I got him mixed up with the other guy. Who's the other late-night jerk-off?
There's...
Jimmy Fallon!
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Kimmel's inoffensive enough. Thank God he can't really sing or dance, so we won't get... too deep into that kind of stuff.
That's, you know, they're all named Jimmy now, so it's a good point that to get them mixed up. It's not that it's actually very natural to mix the two up. The kiss up.
I tell you though, I am absolutely going crazy when they do that. I mean, that is going to bring the house down when they do that little song and dance number. So you know they're going to wheel out Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone to recreate their little song and dance hoochie coo from. From what the hell is the movie?
La La Land? The one you just saw?
Yeah, whatever, you know. But that's going to be a great moment when that comes out.
You know another good moment this year?
Oh, wait, hold on. Breaking news, Dave. Breaking
you found
news.
It?
The Hurt Locker beat out Avatar.
Wow. Look at,
you know,
wow.
I had an idea for a TV show where you should go back and redo the Oscars, you know, starting whenever. Throw a pin in it. 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back and redo the Oscars from each given year. Here's your nominees from that year. Hurt Locker. I'm glad we're on the 2017 Oscar show talking about the 2009 Oscar show. We can roll with it. The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Avatar.
Yep.
The Blind Side. I mean, how the hell does The Blind Side get nominated for Best Picture? My God. District 9, another sci-fi movie. And Education. Inglourious Basterds.
Remember that movie?
I thought Precious and The Blind Side were the same movie. Now I'm glad to see that these are separate projects. So this is good to know. A Serious Man.
Mm-hmm.
Up and Up in the Air. Now, if I'm going back with my Oscar in the time machine, I'm giving it to Up in the Air. That movie has really held up to me, as opposed to these other ones.
So. Oh, wow. I don't remember that one, but that I've heard. I think it got some pretty good reviews. So
it's very, check it out. It's George Clooney. He's mopey in an airport. Not quite mopey,
right.
But
that's,
you know,
right.
In an airport. It's really it's got a nice Kaiser Soze ending. That'll leave you thrown for a loop.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the present day in the DeLorean.
Back to the Future.
What else do we have this year? What's our odds looking like for the Oscars? Do you have those in front of you?
Yes, we do. I do have the odds for the nominees.
I know we had our mutual friend Andy talking about betting against La La Land. Having seen it, I can't advise that strongly enough. Do not bet against this movie. It is just going to... I mean, it's a fait accompli. It's really no point to even watch the Oscars, so this is just going to thoroughly dominate. But,
yeah, I can't argue with that.
What do we have for chuckles and ha-has going against?
All right. Well, let's run it down by most largest odds versus to least odds. And we know that the least odds is La La Land. Coming in at a 200 to 1 odds to win the best picture. I'm pretty sure you know which one this is. Can you, if you were to guess, which one would you guess?
I would guess Hacksaw Ridge.
It's a good guess. It's a good guess. Arrival. Hacksaw Ridge just beat it out.
Wow, The Arrival is that low. I'm shocked by that.
200 to 1.
Now, I only picked Hacksaw Ridge. I've only seen about half of it. And what I got to tell you is that it's pretty damn good. You know, they've just gotten to the ridge. So the movie, if you don't know about it, it's apparently based on a true story. The new Spider-Man hates to fight. He won't pick up a rifle. He's in the Army in World War II. Mm-hmm. They say, look, pal, get your ass a rifle or get out of here. He talks him out of that. They ship him off to Okinawa, fighting off Mr. Miyagi, the whole bit. And now we're waiting on he's going to save the whole platoon without a gun on Hacksaw Ridge.
Wow.
And what I've seen is pretty engaging. You know, it's for Mel Gibson. Hates the Jews, can make a good movie, though.
Well, this has been proven. I can't argue with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I was shocked. I'm actually surprised this crew ever got going again. But also we have Vince Vaughn making a little turn in that. He's, you know, probably terribly miscast.
I haven't heard from him in a while. Yeah.
What's that?
I haven't heard from him in a long time. I think the last movie...
Yeah.
I can't even think of it. But... And we go.
Yeah, I can't even remember. We do get a nice little nod, though, to Swingers, if you ever saw that movie from way back in the day.
You know what? I know they make so many references to that movie. And again, I mentioned it. I gotta watch that movie. There's no excuse. There's no excuse.
Another fantastic Los Angeles movie. You know, if I was making a Mount Rushmore of LA movies, just celebrating LA culture, that would be on there.
Oh, that'd be a good Mount Rushmore. That's a tough one to do because there are a lot of good ones.
I might actually, I could maybe whip it out quick. How do you like them apples?
Oh, really?
I'm gonna go La La Land.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna go. Oh wow, now it does get tough. I would say, what do you call it? The hell were you just talking about? I'm really losing
Swingers.
Wait, what movie?
Swingers, right? Wasn't that the one we were just talking about?
Swingers. Swingers. Then I would go maybe Chinatown, maybe L.A. Confidential.
I was thinking Chinatown, yeah. And I had L.A. Confidential in there, but I didn't know if it was good enough to beat out anybody, beat out some of the other heavy hitters, but...
Here's my X factor. Oh God! Now I got two X factors. I was gonna say Boogie Nights,
mm-hmm.
another great slice of LA movie.
Ooh, that's a good
one. And Heat.
Ooh, good choice. Heat.
He's kind of a dark LA movie.
Yeah.
But, when I think of LA, there's a lot of great great pieces there to make.
That is a good. That
I don't
is
know. You're
intense.
An LA guy, Gabe.
Well,
you could better informed.
No, I think these are good choices. Well, you see, that's part of it, though. I think it's so... it's the kind of movie that's so big at expressing L.A. in its very fiber that it can really resonate with everybody. Like, wow, this is such an L.A. movie. It couldn't get any more L.A. than this. But there's so many movies that really do a good job of bringing out L.A.'s best character traits or just its most... characteristic traits. For those who think that LA is vapid and not and devoid of culture and devoid of anything, and it's just kind of a plot of land, it's not. I mean, you've seen movies like Falling Down that actually literally showcases every single facet and corner of Los Angeles. It's pretty wild. I mean, literally.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Every part
now,
of
Dave,
LA.
This is going back a little bit. Did you ever catch LA Story or Grand Canyon?
I may have caught a little. This is when I was young. I may have caught L.A. Story. That's a good choice. That's a Steve Martin film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good pick there.
What I like about those, my little summation of L.A. and having spent no significant time there is that, you know, what I think the movies probably harp upon is sort of maybe an isolationist kind of feel where you're kind of very much in your car and you're sort of home to office to car to bar, you know, like you're kind of living that transient with a lot of traffic and, you know, maybe a lot of isolation. Whereas in New York, you kind of can't escape that contact. You can't escape people, you know, like you have to be commingled if you really want to get anywhere. You know, like you can't live your life in a car in New York. You got to be on the street, in the subway, you're beating, you know, running into people. And frankly, there's something to be said for both, but it's just kind of sort of the contrast when, you know, when I think of L.A. in a movie.
Well, I tell you, the views from L.A. are certainly one to remember, and same for New York. It's kind of, they got great views too. So certainly they're both iconic in their own right. And some other choices, let me think. Now, I never saw this movie, but To Live and Die in L.A. is one that gets brought up from time to time.
Oh, that's very solid. Very, definitely worth checking out, you know. I love any of that kind of gritty industrial L.A.
Yeah.
I don't know if Reservoir Dogs really hits on that, but certainly it feels like Pulp Fiction probably, you know, seems like a pretty L.A. movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you know, fast food culture.
If you want to venture into comedy, comedy has a lot of L.A. Showcase movies. Beverly Hills Cop is a great example.
Excellent choice. Absolutely.
And how do you follow up a movie like that? You followed up with a movie called Fletch, which came out the year after.
Man!
It's good stuff, huh?
Fletch in here. Absolutely.
And it just brings us full circle.
We're going to need a bigger Mount Rushmore.
It was pretty good stuff. I mean, I'm very glad to see that there's a good. I mean, it's fun that we have like more of them coming out, and then you go into the '90s. You mentioned a couple already. These are good. Those were really good choices. And let me think. Anything else that comes to mind?
I would go way back to like Sunset Boulevard. They were just kind of great. You know, creepy dark side of L.A. You know, CD. You know, Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. Stuff
right. Yeah, that's not bad. It's good. It's a good choice.
Really,
some of these I got to catch up on, you know. Like Chinatown. Again, I've always said this for years. Like, I need to sit down one day and get that AFI Top 150 movies and just watch them all. And just, because I'm way behind. Like, it's embarrassing.
You don't just sit down one day with that list. My God, bro. I went through that one time. It's like having a part-time job. Most of those movies are like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So it's about 100 movies. You know, let's say they average 2.5 hours a clip, so I think being generous.
Right.
You know, that's, what are we at there? If we knew math, we wouldn't be on a podcast. It's a lot of goddamn hours. Close to 300 hours of watching these movies. Now, you've seen a big chunk of them, of course, but
right.
There's a lot you haven't seen either that you gotta kind of muddle your way through. But I thought it was, I was really glad I did that, like, to kind of watch. I think I got through 91 of them.
Oh, really good. That is really good. Because, you know, that's...
Well, it's, yeah.
That's a commitment.
And some of the, and I know the ones, like, I didn't see at the end where, like, they literally weren't on DVD at that point, and then now they are, and I should go back and finish it, but it was, like, Yankee Doodle Dandy and a movie called Sunrise from back in the day.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a complete list, though. It's good. Credit to them for really covering all the years, because that would be easy to overlook, like, the early period, the golden age of movies and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so what else we got on the odd list here?
All right, we're back up on the list.
We know that's not winning shit.
So now, we mentioned Hacksaw Ridge already, so that was a good synopsis. The up next is Hell or High Water at 75-1 odds.
Now, that's a shame at 75-1. I'm sure it's 75-1 for a good reason. Once the Sharpies hammer around a number, we know that it's the right number. But my God, Dave, that might be... I tell you what, it's very funny how you evaluate a movie. And everyone can have their own evaluation. This isn't life. This isn't, like, whatever. This doesn't mean anything. But it's just, when I look at a movie, though, I always say, what's going to stand up in 5 years? And out of this whole lot this year, including La La Land, I'm going to say Hell or High Water will be the movie you still go back to 5 years from now. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, they say whoever they is, but when you watch a movie, you know, usually there's a character who embodies who you are, and usually there's a character who embodies who you want to be. And this year, I would say it as much as a movie. I would say La La Land represents people as they are, kind of very flawed, and, you know, maybe making a lot of bad decisions. And Hell or High Water is who you want to be. It's full of people, smart people making good decisions all through the movie. And it's such a joy to watch that unfold. it's kind of unique, you know. It's because that's the problem I run into sometimes with movies, you know, more and more these days. When you just watch it, you're like, well, this movie wouldn't exist if this guy wasn't a total dumbass. Like, if he just would have been moderately intelligent or made a reasonable choice, you don't have a movie.
Right.
You're hanging on a flawed structure, but not so in Hell or High Water. It's people that, you know, are kind of in their circumstance, and they're kind of both smartly dealing with it, and it's a joy to watch unfold. And I can't recommend that movie enough to everybody to go, you know, get out and see it, especially for guys. Probably definitely more of a guy movie, not a lot of, you know, really can't think of any significant female characters in it, but, you know, it's also probably a little tinge of a modern Western. I don't know if you got a chance to see it yet, but, you know, if, you know, I know people have limited time and limited interest in what they check out this year, but, you know, really any movie that I'm telling people to go see is kind of get out to see La La Land and, you know, get out to see Hell or High Water, you know, and now it's on demand. It's easy enough to check out, but it's a great, great movie.
Cool. Good endorsement there in good stuff, Mr. Quickman. This is a couple of quickies. I'm Dave Medina, and this is the DidCow podcast. And we are running down the Oscars this week.
And that said, you know, thanks for the call, Hell or High Water. No chance of winning. So next.
But an endorsement run nonetheless, and sometimes it doesn't have to be the one that wins the award to be the favorite in your mind or your heart. And this seems to be the case for Quickman. So let's go to the next one.
Well, I would just say a real brief thing. You know, I know a lot of people were upset that Deadpool didn't get nominated. And, you know, I remember seeing Deadpool in the theater. I don't know. Did you catch that by chance?
I did. Now, that's a movie I saw. And it was such a hilarious film. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it'll be a breath of fresh air. But I got to say, now that I've seen it on, like, you know, on cable a few times, I'm kind of like, I did not have to get nominated. But I feel like if you're going to have all these expanded nominees, you know, the Oscars are such a funny kind of fine line.
Right.
That's what I've been trying to tell people recently. It's like, it's really just industry awards. So, like, whatever your chosen industry is, you know, you probably have an awards there. You know, if you sell insurance, I'm sure they have, you know,
yep,
the best new insurance salesman of the year,
yep,
the best insurance salesman of the year, lifetime achievement of insurance salesman. And no one gives a fuck about an insurance salesman. You know?
Right.
But it's just like with movies, people care. So it's,
right.
You know, at the end of the day, these are kind of industry awards, though, and people do care, and that's great, and it's kind of promotes the business. And, you know, to that end, you probably should give a, you know, throw, you know, you got 10 nominations left. Give Deadpool a nomination. But just my little point in that ramble is, you know, in terms of having a fun slot for a nomination, the Mike Francesa, let's nominate a Division I AA player for the Heisman slot. I would say Hell or High Water very much better represents that for you know, the Oscar nominations. You know, even though it didn't kind of get quite the attention or publicity of Deadpool, it's it's a movie that's not going to win. It's probably not, you know, fine cinema at its core, but it's a great movie. It's a great popcorn movie. So
good deal. Now you got me interested in watching it. It's that, which is the beauty of these kind of programs. It really gives people ideas for what to watch next at the theater or on their TV. So pretty good. Yeah, my interpretation of the Oscar awards. I mean, you have a really good perspective on that. And I had not thought about it that way before. It is truly an industry award, basically given away by the movie studios for the movie studios. I'm like, man, you're right. That's actually a good point. But with that all said, I noticed that comedies often have long odds to win a Best Picture Oscar. I mean, a straight-on comedy, in which Deadpool to me was like, it's action, it's sci-fi, but in the end, it was a satire, which is why I enjoyed it so much.
No one understands that. And I can even tell you, you know, again, not that I'm some super duper insider, but you know, knowing some people inside, but you know, it's like nobody understands it. You know, it's so much harder to make a great comedy than it is to, you know, kind of, you know, pull the old heartstrings, quote unquote, in a movie.
That's true.
We're gonna get to Moonlight, which is one of the movies I didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a movie about a kid growing up in the hood who, you know, comes to terms with being gay. Spoiler alert.
mm-hmm.
And that's it. You know, it's basically, you know, that's the story. So that's, you know, it's well made. It's well crafted. You know, you will watch that movie and, you know, probably feel something, you know, all throughout it, unless you're totally dead inside. But at the end of the day, it's just kind of, you know, yeah, you know, with that, Same thing with Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, you beat me to it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, hey, we have this structure and this, you know, this certain set of drama happens in the movie, which is a, you know, a procedural way, which it's going to elicit emotions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even done, you know, to a middling effect, you know, just based on the nature of the thing. It's so much harder, though, to draw a damn laugh out of a person. A laugh is involuntary, you know. It's,
right.
So a well-done comedy definitely should get more praise and, you know. It's funny, we were kind of getting ready to do this tonight, and I'm looking at kind of the major categories, and I'm, you know. This is an industry award, so it's kind of, you know, someone politics to get these categories. You know, they have a best animated feature, which obviously comes from a lot of people making animated movies saying, why the hell aren't I getting nominated for best picture? Give us a best animated picture. And it's like, how many animated movies are there in a year? You know, 10 or 20? There's 500 comedies in a year, but I mean, for real, you know, it's like,
right.
You know, why isn't there a best comedy Oscar? If you're never going to acknowledge it in the main body, you know. I can't even tell you the last comedy that got nominated. Never mind, you know, the last one that won we were talking about the other day is Annie Hall, you know, 40 years ago there.
Wow. That is a long time ago. That was 40 years ago, 1977. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's still way back.
That was a big year in movies. Whatever. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and nothing in that time since, you know.
Where was Tootsie? Was that in there somewhere?
You know what? I actually wonder if that win. Maybe you're right. But
let me go check on that.
But even if it did win, all right. So now we moved it up to 1982. So,
right. Not a big leap. It's a good point.
Cool.
I mean, that's like 5 year difference. So it's not. It's still a long old time ago. Very true.
Yeah.
Let's see accolades. Let's see what it got. The film was nominated. Lang was the only winner for Best Actress in a Supporting Role, so no Best Picture that year.
Gandhi. Now, there's one we can go back and give the awards over again, Dave. Of course you'll give it to Tootsie that year. Would you get lost with Gandhi? Who cares?
I did. You know, I saw Gandhi, actually. I remember, I mean, I saw it in school, like in a class one day. They showed it. It was a very long movie. I remember that being a very long movie. I mean, obviously a great story, but what else was on the table that year? I'll have to look that up.
Well, we had E.T., which has not aged well. We had Tootsie, which is really just a fantastic original damn movie. And we had The Verdict. We had Missing. Who cares? And those look like kind of the big ones. Let's see what else we had. Oh, Officer and a Gentleman, not nominated.
Oh, that was a good one, right? Is that the one? Which is the one where like Al Pacino was in it and he was blind? Is that it? Or am I thinking a different movie?
No, that was this was Richard Gere. I got no place else to go.
Oh, that He went nuts. That's right.
Let's be honest, Richard. How about you go to the Isaiah Thomas Theater? But we also had,
Says they had Missing. You mentioned Missing, right?
That was Lou Gaca Jr. tearing it up as the drill sergeant. Mm-hmm. He had Love Lift Us Up Where We Belong. He's going to the factory. She's some kind of grimy chick working on her gears or something. He shows up in his little white suit. He pulls her out of there. The boss is like, hey, go ahead. Hey, you know, bang out for the day. They actually don't even punch out. Just stay on the clock and let them take you out of here. I'm sure there's a $35 motel down the road. Go have at it. Slow to your thing.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, man.
Yeah, short of Tootsie, which is a great call, you know, I'm sure we can find comedies that have been nominated.
Right.
I'm sure some maniac would claim The Artist was a comedy or something, but you know, that's just some people would claim Life is Beautiful as a comedy.
Right.
The less we say about that, the better. Anyway.
All right, let's get back to the odds then. I am very intrigued to see what other comedies were in the mix over the last 20 years, because I was thinking, you know, like When Harry Met Sally, that was like over 25 years ago now. Almost 30. It's like 28 years old, that movie. I wonder if that... Would that have been on there?
I would bet that wasn't even nominated.
You know, I bet you're right. I bet you're right about that. Well, while we look that up, let's get to you the next odds. It is Fences at 75-1, and it's probably an appropriate rating. I mean, Denzel's an awesome actor. Everybody knows that. But I think a lot of people were saying that it was whatever, like the movie was good. Some people say it was all right. I'm not sure if anyone really had the opinion that, just from what I was reading, that it was a serious contender for the Best Picture. So we'll give it a quick, man. Get your thoughts on the movie. I don't know if you saw this one either, but your thoughts.
I haven't, but you know how I'm treating that movie, and I'm getting more excited to see it. I'm pretending. Did you ever see Rudy, Dave?
I did see Rudy. Yeah.
You remember Rudy's got that black janitor friend?
I do remember. He wasn't able to play. That was sad.
Well, I'm just imagining that's Charles S. Dutton's life story.
Okay.
You know, he goes home from the stadium. He's got this wife. You know, they're living this, you know, living this hard times blues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes Fences more interesting to me. But, you know, I don't know. Not much interest in Fences.
Alrighty. So let's get to the next one. Lion. And this was talked about too, but I don't have much of a feel for this one. 50-1 odds.
50-1? Get out of here. Would you please? So that is never going to win. That's higher than Hell or High Water? I demand a recap. Here's all I got to say about Lion. It looks like Life of Pi on a train. You know, poor little Indian kid gets lost, wandering, you know, who cares? And like, is Dev Patel the only Indian actor out there? This guy really gets a ton of working this Indian gimmick. God bless him.
Right.
He's got Slumdog. He's got this. But I probably actually would like to see Lion at some point, just because I do go gaga for, you know, the subcontinent life in India and all that stuff. So I'll check it out. But it's going to be that or Arrival is the next movie I kind of check out to see. So.
Good deal. And we mentioned Arrival earlier in the program. I think I gravitate towards comedy, I gravitate towards sports, and I gravitate towards science fiction / fantasy. So those often grab me. So Arrival will get me going. You know, like last year, was it last year? I think it was last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago when The Martian came out. Mesmerizing movie. Just for me, the most, and this is in the year that Star Wars came out, but for me, it was really the most satisfying movie I had seen up to that point that year. It was really good. Like, I really enjoyed it.
I would agree. That's kind of what movies should be. You know, we could have a whole other podcast and a whole long discussion about, you know, kind of where movies are and where they're going in terms of, you know, superheroes and action movies and kind of movies kind of catered to a global audience. But, you know, in terms of, and I think so many people are content and okay with watching television now. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for watching television. You get to know a character over, you know, the equivalent of 50 hours instead of just 2 hours. And it's, it gives you a lot more, it's just a different experience, but a lot more depth if you really like a character. Mm-hmm. But when you have a movie like The Martian, like that is movie making at its best. Like that's something television can't deliver. Like you get immersed, and you know, you watch that movie, you never for one second are you like, oh, that's a nice special effect. You're like, you're on Mars in that movie. You're on Mars.
You're on Mars. I know you're allowed to have your opinion, but what if your opinion is on Mars?
But by God, you are on Mars watching that movie.
You really are. I literally are on Mars. It's really...
Yeah,
it's,
the great power and beauty of that. So.
It is funny how immersive an experience it is. And if you haven't seen it, and it comes out at a big screen theater, like a movie theater, a big old screen, like giant, the biggest screen in your town, that is like the perfect venue to watch that movie. It really takes advantage of that giant screen. It's really nice. So.
Absolutely.
Cool beans. So let's get to the next one. And we mentioned it already, Manchester by the Sea. Now, I overheard some of this movie. I had some friends watching it, and I was just walking by. I was around it. It's a very depressing movie. Wow. Like, it's kind of sad. Like, I was just thinking, boy.
Have you seen it yet, though, Dave?
I haven't seen the whole movie, no. But
it's not as depressing as necessarily advertised. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. Are people going to be spoiled watching it? I don't know. The guy's kids die, okay? Spoiler alert. The guy's whole family gets wiped out because he's a drunk alky walking around, you know, Cape Cod or some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you get back to a structure of saying characters that do dumb things in movies, so that's kind of hard to, you know, get with them. But, yeah, the telling of that movie is, you know, it's well-structured and, you know, it's not, for that kind of heavy content, you know, there's enough moments. And maybe because I just heard, like, oh, it's such a depressing movie, I was kind of surprised at some of the, you know, the slightly lighter moments they were able to kind of get out of that content. But, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's just kind of, you know, nothing much happens. It's a procedural movie. It's just kind of like, we're going to tell you the story and, you know, listen, that's hard. You know, it's not easy. You know, plenty of people make plenty of movies all year long that cannot execute that. So I don't dismiss the execution of that. But it's like, at some point, at least for my taste or for my personal feeling, like, you know, you want some sort of evolution. And, it can be an evolution in a character or it can be an evolution in a story. And, you know, this movie offers absolutely none of that. You know, people would tell you, hey, that's reflective of life. Well, guess what? I live my life. I don't got to pay $12 for this goddamn life. Take me on a ride, my God.
Yeah, it can't be completely reality. Yeah. That's a good point. It's like, oh, it's so real. I mean, it's great, but if it's just the stuff that you're around every day, it is kind of like I'm already living it. Like, why do I need to see it in the theater?
Well, you'll feel better about yourself. You think, at least I'm not this asshole who killed my kids. maybe there's something to be said for that.
I suppose so. All right, let's get to the next of the movies, and only three left. Hidden Figures, and again, this was much lampooned on the board today at the MikeFrancesa.com. And I guess the idea is I love the premise myself. I think it's a pretty cool concept, but I can understand where one would say this is not enough material to sustain a two-hour film. So I'm not arguing that. So let's get your take on it, your thoughts on this film, and what drives you not to see it, I guess, at this point.
A little bit of the same boat, you know. Again, you know, when you watch movies, you say, "Well, what would be a good movie? What should we make a movie about?" You know,
mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to make a movie about the white guys who did math for NASA because who gives a shit? There's a whole bunch of white guys doing math for NASA. You know, there's three black broads doing their little NASA numbers. Okay, so that's unique. That's by definite. Now you're taking me on a ride, like I said before.
Right.
But, you know, again, you get into the, you know, existence of things being a procedural, you know.
Right.
When I look at Hidden Figures, if I just had to kind of look at it with a snapshot, I don't even know if Disney made that movie, but it seems like a Disney movie. It reminds me of a movie that was also critically acclaimed. I don't think I've seen the whole thing, because I didn't have to see the whole thing, because I knew exactly what the hell the damn movie was going to be. But do you remember that Dennis Quaid movie, The Rookie? Which is also based on a true story.
Oh, The Rookie! Was that the one where the guy was like a math teacher and he became...
He works at Jiffy Lube. Yeah, whatever. He's a math teacher who works at Jiffy Lube. And it's based on a true story. Jim Morris,
who's,
you know, in his late 30s, you know, had blown out his arm in his 20s. He was somewhat of a prospect or was in the minors. He starts throwing for the whole high school ball team. They're like, holy shit, you're throwing hard. And like, you know, against all odds, on the those old late 90s jabroni redouble rate.
Exactly.
He gets called up to the majors. He gets his ass handed to him. But hey, that's a good story. Here's old Jim Morris, who kind of, you know, came through it all. And it's kind of like, okay, you know, you know exactly what that movie's going to be. You know, there's probably going to be some down moments. He's going to argue with the wife. Oh, I don't know if I can do this. It's going to be tough. Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, and then of course, you know, it's going to be the coach who's like, boy, aren't you a little old to be pitching? and then it's like, sure enough, he like spikes out probably, you know, the Baseball America number two Philadelphia top prospect. And, you know, the guy's war is through the roof. The minor collection, boy, here he is, folks. So I kind of see it the
screenplay with Hidden Figures. You know, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be the stodgy old white guy at NASA, like, oh, you're bringing these people in to brew the map? Are you sure? Young go-getter be like, listen, math doesn't see color, man.
Oh, gosh.
And then, you know, it's going to be, you know, a tight-ass, honky white world. They're going to, you know, lighten up NASA a little bit, you know. Cut to the girls in the bar, you know. I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. You know, they're having drinks at Cape Canaveral. Next thing you know, Neil Armstrong's on the moon. The Hidden Figure 6 are doing the dance. And away we go. You know, I just described the whole movie to you in 2 minutes. Do I really need to go see it? I probably will check it out just to see it at this point. There's been so much talk and hype.
But, well, you can see if your predictions came true, but, you know, honestly, they're probably going to. I mean, you've just nailed every possible cliche with a movie like that. So I'm like,
well, you kind of know what the notes are.
It's right, right.
Like, I just tried. It's going to be almost note for note of what The Rookie is. You know, it's going to be, you know, whatever.
I hope Mandy listens to this podcast tonight, because he had a rundown very similar to yours, but you had a much better description. I think you get a kick out of this.
I had the benefit of audio, but I have echo. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'll check it out at some point. Just
yeah. No, I mean, it's a very predictable film. I can't argue with that.
But listen, I like artsy-fartsy movies and all that stuff. And it, you know, I saw Moonlight, because I'm like, you know what, Moonlight's the kind of movie I would like. And I saw it, and I'm like, that's exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Oh,
like,
interesting.
It challenged me in no way, or was nothing kind of really different in any regard. You know, that's not a knock of a movie. Maybe you get older, you see enough movies, kind of, you know, you learn how the sausage is made, and, you know, a little the mystery goes, you know. That's right. Why I love La La Land, because, again, you know, kind of just, you know, the movie is, let's say this, it has some bittersweet romance to it, and, you know, you kind of see that coming, but you don't exactly see how you're going to get there. It's still enjoyable enough, and there's enough kind of wrinkles and turns to kind of, you know, kind of keep you engaged as an audience. I can't really see Hidden Figures necessarily providing that. Part of that's the burden of doing, you know, a historical movie. Like,
right.
You know, we goddamn got them all into the moon. You know, like, you know, we know they can do math at the end of the day. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure it was a tough spot being a black chick at NASA, but it's like, you know, obviously we know it worked out, you know.
Right.
Thank God it did. I'm glad they were good at math. But
I mean, what would the turning point in the movie be? They forgot to carry the 4, and then they had to go back and redo, re-correct.
Exactly.
You guys have valid points. I have to be honest. I mean, this morning was enlightening to me. You do raise some very cogent arguments here. That this is a good point.
Well, I'm hoping it's just as simple as they show up a calculator, and the NASA guys are working on like an abacus or something. They're like, have you seen what these chicks got? They got these goddamn calculators. It's gonna make our life so much.
Wouldn't that have been something if like Marty McFly came back from like 1985 and showed, hey guys, you guys with that little slidey thing, I got this calculator. And it's like, whoa.
Exactly. Now, here's how Hidden Figures would shock me. If they actually are able to substantiate that these black chicks somehow faked the moon landing, and then I'll be like, wow, they really are Hidden Figures.
Oh, you know? Cliche. I'm a couple of quickies. DBS, Sports Radio. No, that's pretty funny.
moon landing probably wasn't fake.
But people love to bring up that idea. Like, people love to come up with ways it could have been. I'll go back to your other point, too, where you said that where you know movies where you know the ending, but you still wonder how they got there. The Martian was totally that, because you know he was going to be making it back. It's just that, but you wondered, how is he going to get there from there? And that was what was so exciting about that film.
And again, I'll go back to Hell or High Water. You don't know really where that movie's going. Now, that movie could, you know, take you on, you know, a lot of different roads, and that, you know, just really sucks you in as kind of a viewer just watching it for you. You know, even Hacksaw Ridge, you know, you kind of know, you sort of, you know, if you see anything about the press of the movie, you know where it's going. So it's kind of, And it's, you know, again, having only seen half of it, it's a much better ride getting there than I would have thought, you know, but and there's something to be said for that, for, you know, doing the ride in a good way. Now, you know, most movies, the good guys are going to win, and the guy's going to get the girl and all that kind of stuff, but it's like, you know, you want to feel like, well, maybe it won't this time, or, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, how are they going to get out of this one?
It's a good query. We had, I think, on a prior point in time in our history, spoken about The Revenant, or was that someone else? But I remember, I thought we were talking about that once.
I think we may have, yeah.
Okay.
I definitely think.
And that was a similar idea where it was about the journey, because you knew the end, you knew what was going to happen in the end, but you just didn't know how he'd get there. And there was a little bit of that. But a lot of people were disappointed with that movie, too. They were like, well, it kind of doesn't go anywhere. It's just kind of like he's kind of sitting in the woods. He's fighting a bear. He's trying to, you know, get some assorted pieces to float on a river.
Well, that's made from the same filmmaker who made Birdman. And mm-hmm. both of those films are absolute monuments to technique and kind of, you know, the real nuts and bolts of making movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, caviar isn't for everyone. And caviar to a lot of people probably doesn't taste good. But, like, to those that know good caviar, they'll go absolutely gaga for certain kinds of caviar. Mm. Maybe that movie's a little like that.
I gotcha. Yeah, and I had a good time with it. I guess it's not for everyone, but I certainly did enjoy it. And it's just like caviar, too. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's kind of a very finely textured, you know, kind of gritty, gutty movie, but again, you talk about a universe you reach out and touch, you know, some movies really dwell upon that, you know, could there have been, you know, different elements to that may, you know, certainly, you know, with that movie, did I need him obsessing about his dopey kid and his wife, you know, none of that was real, but that was just stuff they slapped in the movie to kind of,
right.
You know, Revenant based on true events, you know, the simple story of that true event is pretty crazy. You know, knowing that guy had to be a tough bastard and he probably would have come back madder than a hornet looking to kind of whip some ass. You know, I didn't need him to be having acid dreams about his dead son, but, you know, so be it.
I still didn't really figure out those dreams either. And at the end of the movie was kind of odd from that standpoint. So you're right about
Yeah, you know, we're in Quebec, we're talking to French guys, but somehow we're talking Indians, and I know Indians were up in Quebec, but, you know, let's, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Streamlined.
Yeah.
Streamlined.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, I think that was a little bit of the same kind of ending that Birdman had, where it's sort of like, what the heck is this? What does it mean? Sort of, that sort of feel with it. That was just weird. Birdman, at least,
yeah.
There was a very definite conclusion, but you just wondered whether he actually, what actually was happening. Was he already dead by that point? Is he actually flying? He probably was not actually flying.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of, you know, you don't have to get too cute. Just make the goddamn movie.
Yeah.
You know?
With you. All right, so two more to go. Let's see. Moonlight, we've discussed already.
So Moonlight is number two on the Oscar?
Yeah.
Would you get out of here with that goddamn movie? I mean, listen, it's a good enough movie, you know. I don't know what you know about Moonlight, if you've seen it, you know. It's kind of the story of a kid's life. He's a little kid, you know. They tweak him for being gay. He's a teenager. He doesn't know what he's doing. He kind of dresses a little too sharp for the ghetto. Some dude gives him a hand job on the beach. And then Act 3, he's kind of become like a, you know, kind of a tough guy, dealing with his gay side. But he goes to meet the guy who gave him a hand job, makes him a nice little Cuban dinner, and I don't know exactly what happened in the end there. We see some moonlight at the end. And that's the end of the movie. I mean, come on. Nice little movie. Best picture? Would you? It doesn't matter. You could make them all 10,000 to one. No one's beating Gaga Land.
Right on. And
I can't. I can't believe that's number two. I'm not sure. Hidden Figures, or
right.
You know.
8-1
Shots by Moonlight.
Yeah.
No, it's funny, you know, a lot of a big slate of kind of African American kind of themed, you know, kind of content in the nomination. That's been a big discussion in recent years, and you know, to kind of get, you know, more black films, I guess, sort of, you know, in the mix. And the Academy is just funny, you know. It's like, for whatever it is, it's still made up of kind of old, fuddy-duddy white guys.
Right.
Predominantly making up the, you know, I guess that complexional change, you know, literally. But, you know, for all, you know, everyone's like, oh, Hollywood is liberal and blah, blah, blah. It's like, Hollywood is not quite near as liberal as anyone would presuppose it is, you know, because, you know, I think one of the bigger Oscar snubs of recent history, for my take, is Brokeback Mountain, which, you know, to me was just a fantastic goddamn movie, you know. But it's like, you know, was it snubbed because it was kind of too gay? I don't know. You know, it certainly didn't make sense artistically that it should, you know, get a hand wave. But, you know, so that's why I'm just shocked that Moonlight is kind of, you know, that high up, you know. Because they haven't historically necessarily, you know, gravitated towards that kind of stuff. So,
right.
But, you know, like I said, it's all academic. It's all over but the shout.
This is
La La Land.
La La Land all the way. And just to give it to you officially, their odds are 1 to 15. So that's laying a lot. I think...
It's still worth betting on.
Yeah, huge,
I mean,
favorite.
It's still free money if you bet on it. I mean, there's no chance it can lose.
How much I be allowed to put on this? Let me see. Because you're right. I think let me put this to action. Let me double check. It's a great question.
I hope I don't lose the Dave New Car Fund. the biggest shock in the world coming down.
Wouldn't that be I gotta put down a lot in money line in Vegas terms. It's -1500, so to make a dollar I would have to put down how much? I would have to put down $15 to win a buck, so I would have to,
it's a guaranteed winner.
I think you're right, though.
That line's going to move even more, right?
You know, it might move a little bit more, yeah. I mean, we may move up to 2,000 by the end of the week.
Who the hell is going to bet on Lion?
Right.
Right. Hey, no one gives a shit, Lion.
No, it's I mean, I'm going to empty the bank account and win like $5 out of this, but I mean, it would, but you know, at least you know you're getting them back, you know.
Here's my little dark horse bet. I don't know if you have any of the other category odds, but I know Emma, and I know this from talking to our mutual pal Andy today, who told us Emma Stone is the odds on favorite for best actress, and she'll probably will win, but the woman. The lady actor, don't call them actresses, who won Best Actress at the Golden Globes was Isabelle Huppert. Who did a movie called Elle, which I haven't seen, but I kind of heard some stuff recently about it. It sounds like a very, very hardcore movie, you know. And maybe it kind of wasn't quite a cup of tea. I don't know how many people have seen it, but it really sounds like that was a fantastic role. So if I was looking to wager any money on some kind of long odds, I don't know if she can pull it out. You know, it might just be so La La Land centric this year that Emma Stone's going to sweep through. You know, usually these Oscar odds are pretty tight. You know, it seems like you get very few upsets with them.
Right.
But you know, based on whatever polling they do or whatnot, but.
Well,
but yeah, no, that's one voice I might look for an upset. So.
Well, that would be a good value pick, and her odds right now, Isabelle, who I don't know how you pronounce it, but her name, she would be 10-1 odds right now to win the Best Actress.
Oh yeah, I think that's a good one. Who's the favorite? Who's the long shot for Best Actress?
All right, so the favorite, as you established, is Emma Stone. She's 1-8, so you have to put down 8 to win 1.
Okay. So, with Best Actor, then, who do we have there?
And next up, at 5-1, Natalie Portman for her role in Jackie, which interesting thought for a movie. I've never seen a movie about Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy.
I mean, that should, well, she already won, though, so they probably won't give her the best actor.
Okay, so then we won't. We'll probably...
Can we go to actor, Dave?
Yeah, actor, yes. Let me get to actor. Okay, yeah. So actor, the... Now, if you were to just gun to your head, who would you guess is the favorite for the actor?
I would guess Ryan Gosling, but... only just because it's on the sweep of that momentum, but maybe Denzel. What are we sitting there?
Well, Denzel's at 6-5. Gosling's at 15-1. A little bit of surprise. A little bit.
Wow, that is shocking.
Yeah, okay. And the favorite is actually besting both of them. Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea.
He
is.
Oh, I forgot all about that. Okay.
Yeah. So 5-8 for Mr. Affleck. Yeah.
But that's kind of BS. That's because it was Ben Affleck's brother. I mean, he wasn't that good at it, you know. But anyway, neither was Ryan Gosling. He was just playing his dopey self.
Yeah, I heard his singing ability wasn't so good in this film, but, you know, that's true of a lot of movies. I mean, you ever see Moulin Rouge? And was it Moulin Rouge? Which one was it where, like, guys tried to sing and they couldn't? Les Miserables, I think, the more recent one.
Man, I damn love Moulin Rouge. You know, I have nothing against the musical.
I think they were good, though, in that one. I think they sang well in that movie.
We had Ewan McGregor in Moulin Rouge. I mean, you talk about charming.
Yep.
Well, Les Mis is Hugh Jackman, right?
I think so. It was Hugh Jackman, and who's the guy that was in Gladiator?
Another guest of the Isaiah Thomas Theater.
Oh man, funny. Because when I see his face, yeah. Anyway, let's get in. Russell Crowe was the other guy I was thinking of. I forgot. So there we go. Yeah, and he can't sing at all. Like he's terrible.
Yeah,
so.
I've lost Russell.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so then. Let's go to Bet. Let's see. We had support. Do you want to get into a supporting actor and actress, or do you want to just jump? All right. Let's hit them all. So, supporting actor, and again, I would have no idea who any of these guys are. So, Jeff Bridges is in the mix. He is the fourth. He has the fourth greatest odds at 20-1. Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animal is 15-1 odds to win Best Supporting Actor. And Dev Patel for Lion at 6-1 is the second greatest odd.
I understand. A little shaky. He's supposedly the lead in the movie, but you know they stuck him in the best supporting role to get him nominated. So
interesting.
Who knows that old Jeff? Who's the favorite there? Though?
All right, so your favorite is Mahershala Ali for Moonlight at 1-12. 1-12.
Wow, is that the little kid?
I would know. I guess so. So I.
Yeah, that would be tough. Hold on. Let me look this up.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a child winning.
It was hardcore. He was good. I got to give him that much.
Okay. So. All right.
But I don't know. That's supporting actor. Why not? Give it to him. God bless.
So we probably that's probably how it'll play out based on the odds. So let's now go to best supporting actress. And we'll run them down in, again, same order. Octavia Spencer for Hidden Figures, 75-1. Tied with Nicole Kidman in Lion, 75-1 for both of them. And then you have Naomi Harris.
So dopey. Like, I could see Octavia Spencer probably, you know, with the momentum they had that movie, probably winning. But she'd already won the Oscar, so it's become, oh, we can't give you a second Oscar. You know, for the same reason, Jeff Bridges probably deserves that Oscar for, Color High Water, but you know, the theory being, well, we just gave Jeff Bridges the Oscar, we can't give him another Oscar. So,
yeah, I've seen that used before.
Who else are we looking at?
All right, so, I think I mentioned Naomi Harris for Moonlight at 30-1. I think maybe I didn't, but then number two, as in terms
he's
of
really, really in the damn movie, I mean, really, but okay.
All right, and number two, Michelle Williams from Manchester by the Sea at 25-1.
Okay.
And your favorite, Viola Davis for Fences, 1-100. Wow. It's wild. It's a huge, huge
Again,
favorite.
Again, the scenario where I think she's really the co-lead, they mm-hmm. snuck her in the best supporting, so it's kind of tough. You know, you get that much dimension in on the supporting role. Hard to overcome.
I see what you mean.
Wow.
Yeah, because yes, you're kind of right about that, because she's like the wife of Denzel's character in Fences. So to make it a supporting actor, I mean, yeah, I guess you could, but they're kind of both equal in prominence within the context of the film. So it is true. It's sort of a best actress in that who happens to be in the best supporting actress category. It's actually a good point.
Yeah. And Octavia has won before, I believe. So.
Okay.
But hey. God bless. Who cares?
Well, good for her. Good news that she got nominated.
Good news, Octavia. You're a two-timer. Congratulations.
All right. So let's go to Best Director. And it's safe to say that whoever directed La La Land will end up very high on this list.
Without question.
I mean, the name could have been like Joe Jabroni, and he would have made it on the list because he directed La La Land. Anyway, we have our nominees. First, we have Denis Villeneuve for Arrival. I assume that, I don't know where, maybe he's French, maybe he's from some other country, but 60-1 odds. All right.
No chance.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised. And then you mentioned Mel Gibson.
It's a Brex, Lucky Pierre. No one's got any use for you.
Right on. So up next, Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge, 50-1.
Now, it should have been 50-1 that clown even got nominated. I didn't even realize he was nominated for Best Director. Hey, God bless him. I guess Mel's back, everybody.
All right, so up next, Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea, 15-1.
No, get lost. I mean, you made that sorry slog of a movie that didn't go anywhere. Take a hike.
All right. And now the second best chances go to Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight, at 10-1.
Ugh.
Yeah, you've been... I've enjoyed your reactions to these nominations.
Yeah. God damn. I mean, you know. These are deck chairs in the Titanic of the SS La La Land. I mean, it doesn't really matter that much, I guess.
Exactly.
One's got to be number two, but
and
know, what's Mr. La La's on?
All right. So first of all, can the director of La La Land, Damien Chazelle, his odds are 1-30. Huge favorite.
So my takeaway from this podcast is that I can't believe Octavia Spencer is the runaway slam dunk of all this, but God bless her. If she's 1-100, I would have assumed, that's really good odds on La La Land winning Best Picture at only 1-15, looking
right.
At those two comparisons.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, I mean, if you had $1,000 and you were going to put it into Octavia Spencer, I mean, I say have your fun, go for it, because I feel like that's probably in the cards. Similarly for Best Picture, I mean, I don't even know how much money any one person could actually commit to that kind of a wager. But as you mentioned, Quicks, these are rarely upset. Like, when there's a favorite like that, it's... And again, I'm involved now, so maybe this is going to change. But seriously, usually this stuff is chalk and it stays. It's set in stone. So we
exceedingly so.
Yeah,
exceedingly.
Absolutely.
So, you know, time will tell.
Yep, no doubt about it. Yeah, all right, that's a pretty good rundown. Very good stuff.
I got to throw one more shout out too. I know people you don't give a crap or pay too much attention to best. Best documentary, but I did get out to see, I know the OJ documentary, which is probably the most seen documentary. You know, they put that in the theater to get nominated, the ESPN OJ documentary, which I feel like is a little bit flimsy. That's not a movie, okay? You're not going to the movie theater to sit down and watch the OJ documentary for 7 hours. So, But I did see a documentary called I Am Not Your Negro, which I think is nominated, and I think, you probably don't have the odds on that, but I would guess that's got to be pretty close to a front runner. I thought that was just a fantastic movie that I would recommend people kind of getting out to see. It deals with the kind of writings of this civil rights leader. I believe his name was John Lewis. Or I need to be totally a clown in messing up the guy's name because I was not familiar with him before I saw it. But it was just really, kind of a terrific movie to go check out. So James Baldwin, what do I think? John Lewis. James Baldwin, who passed away, I guess, 30 years ago at this point. But maybe he kind of wasn't. But sort of when you see in the movie, he was kind of very much a contemporary of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and kind of was on TV panels in the 60s with them, and kind of, the movie takes you through, him, and he's also friends with Medgar Evers, and sort of him, in the civil rights movement, seeing his friends, murdered. So it's really kind of a hardcore movie, but, very much a good watch. So just throw a little love to the documentary category as well.
I saw the trailer for it walking around at the Landmark, which is a really posh theater where they show, some major films, but they also show some documentaries and art films. And this was advertised on their screen, and it was pretty provocative. It's kind of like, this is pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah. And I know it's not everyone's first instinct to go out to the theater to go see a documentary. But so if you see it, they're great. If you don't, check it out when it is on Netflix. Probably be there sooner than later.
All right. Well, this has certainly been a fun hour, and next time I get you on, I got some random questions, but let me see if I can throw one of them at you. Okay. This is a good lead up to our next podcast in April. Who is one civilian, actor, actress, anybody who you would like to see on Raw, Mania, SmackDown, or whatever, a WWE event that has not been on there yet? So is there one guy that you can think of from the rest of the world, the civilian world, that you would love to see in one of these events?
That I would like to see.
Like Mike, for example.
No, I'm just thinking. It's a good question. There's so many. Listen, the one guy I would say, but he's almost in the world, so I almost don't count him, is Conor McGregor from UFC.
Mm-hmm.
But he's almost like lives a pro wrestler like lifestyle. So I wouldn't even count him. I might say, if we're going to get totally gaga, bonkers, and nuts, Obama. Obama could cut a promo, no doubt about that. I don't know what context you'd have him on the show in. But,
he'd be going to Mike, you're right.
Again, if you're giving me, just go crazy with, your wish list of people. If I was to take another sports figure, I'm totally ruining your question here, Dave. Maybe I'll settle on one as I just kind of go through a couple in my head.
Well, let's do one from sports. Yeah, all right.
You can't go wrong with Gronk.
Well, I like the call.
Gronk or Richard Sherman, but I'll give even one more dark horse from football who I think would be awesome. Vontaze Burfict.
Oh, wow.
If you put him in the wrestling environment, man, I think he would be... he'd be something else, just kind of...
He might take it too seriously. He might really go...
Well, again, I don't know. If you like Brock Lesnar's wrestling.
Yeah.
Say, who's the guy that's credible? You have Vontaze Burfict staring across from you. You're probably wondering, what the hell is going to happen here? Is he going to murder me? Man, I think Gronk is just such a natural choice, though.
Yeah.
You feel like Gronk will be there one day, just his personality, his size. And then my other oddball thing was something, I don't know how he would work, though, but I would kind of want to see it just to see how freaky and weird it would get.
because I think he's almost that kind of personality as it is. It's like a guy like Alex Jones to stick him into
into
wrestling. Like that kind of kooky. I don't know if you ever like seen him talk or anything. He's like kind of a total screwball kind of kook. I think that's when I think of wrestling, that's what I think of, is a bunch of screwball kooks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'd be pretty pretty appropriate there. So anyway, any one of those guys. But yeah, pipe dream, give me Obama. Let him get in there and run a promo.
That'd be interesting. You know, it certainly would get some headlines, and I think he'd have a lot of fun with it if he went through with it. So it'd be good times. Yeah. All right, man. Well, you know, that's all the time we've got tonight, Quicks. And thanks very much for coming on, and really is fun chatting some Oscars with you. And we'll do it again in a couple months. About a couple months.
My pleasure, Dave. I look forward to it, man. Thanks so much.
You got it. Take it easy. All right. So that's the Quick Man, a couple quickies on our program tonight. Really a good time. And we close it out with the music, of course. Here we go. Thanks very much to the Quicks for coming on with us. We'll have him back for the WrestleMania preview. It's actually less than 2 months. It's about a month and a half, so don't miss it. You'll have him. You'll hear from him. You'll hear from everybody else, too. It's going to be a big panel once again. I'm Dave Mendina. You can catch me at DitCow if you're on Twitter, or at our website, DitCow.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time.